Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Bookworms and culture vultures, and welcome to Book Off, a literary podcast with a difference. I'm Joe Haddo, and it's my pleasure to welcome two gentlemen who never fail to make myself and many others laugh with their unique wit and charm. My first guest is an award-winning comedian, former junior doctor, and now best-selling author whose book, This Is Going to Hurt, has been in the top five of the UK book charts for over 5 months. It's Adam Kay. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Very well, and lovely to see you in this resplendent shirt that you have.
Thank you very much. From afar. Oh, we could describe it as anything because it's audio.
You can say what you want.
This cost £1 million.
And my second guest, sat with a £1 million jacket on, is a poet, punk, social commentator, rock star and all-round entertainer who's just released his first collection of poetry in 30 years. Tell me it isn't so, John Cooper Clarke.
It is so, yeah. I neglected the publishing side of things in favour of personal appearances, I'm afraid.
Well, it's true to say we certainly haven't missed seeing you over the last 30 years because you have been everywhere on tour and on TV shows, etc.
Yeah, I've always worked ever since I determined to become a professional poet. That's all I've ever done. I've never had to get a paper round, put it that way.
Oh, you missed out.
Yeah, I bet.
I did a paper round for a while.
Did you? I once did a friend's paper round back in my school days when he went on holiday, and I never realised how heavy paper could get. I figured I'll do it on the bike. No way, man.
Well, it puts you all lopsided on the bike, doesn't it?
It pulls you right off it. Yeah.
Now, did you do the weekend papers? Maybe that's why they were extra heavy.
Oh, that was obvious. Actually, they were thicker, but it was pre-Sunday supplements.
Ah.
So it wasn't as bad as it probably is now. Do you even get paper boys anymore?
I think they still exist.
Do they?
Yeah. People still exist,
really,
I think.
People don't really read a lot of papers.
Not like it was.
Paper boys and milkmen.
No.
You ever get them anymore? I'm not usually up at that hour.
I think milkmen do exist still.
They were ahead of the game. They were the first electric vehicle pioneers. Elon Musk woke up one morning, saw that jangling down his cul-de-sac, and was like, I know what I'm doing.
That's it. The noisiest thing about that vehicle was the rattle of the glass bottles in their crates, wasn't it?
That's
you know what I mean? Take them off. I mean, on the way home, they were utterly silent.
You've got a Prius, basically, haven't you?
But they were thinking about the planet way ahead of everybody.
They were industry.
At some indeterminate point, they started selling eggs and yogurt as well.
Orange juice. They had that sort of fresh orange juice.
The bad orange juice.
Awful.
They'd waved an orange once, or some acid or something.
It was ghastly, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't like fruit juice at the best of times, but, you know, that
it's
was...
bad for you.
Nasty.
Any doctor will tell you that.
It's what? Bad,
bad
for you.
You, yeah.
I knew that.
Too many
as
vitamins.
A doctor, I knew that.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, a tumbler of apple juice. You wouldn't eat that many apples in 5 years to get that amount of juice out of an apple.
It's true.
I mean, get an apple, squeeze it. Are you getting any juice out of it? No.
No,
it takes an industrial process to even get that juice out of it in the first place. So it would never happen in nature that you would ingest that amount of apple juice. They'll come round to our way of thinking, Doc.
Yeah. And they'll say maximum one a day.
That's right. So you've got two doctors here telling you not to drink fruit juice, right?
If you do have any medical issues, we're both, I mean, entirely underqualified, but enthusiastic to help.
Well, it's completely out of the loop, but I'm still, you know...
still practising.
I'm a practising...
man of letters.
What's... hypochondriac. Physician, heal thyself has always been my motto.
Well, you've got Google now. You don't need to... You can be a cyberchondriac.
You can.
You probably don't have Google. You've probably just got the Encyclopedia Britannica.
There's a reason why I'm a hypochondriac, actually. I'm all always ill.
John, if I could ask you about this amazing collection and how does it feel to be publishing again after 30 years? Have these poems been around for a while?
Actually, I've got a lot more than this, but this is the stuff I've written in the last 7-8 years. So it's the most sort of modern stuff in it. I think I even mention a mobile phone at some point in one of them.
You are actually, on trend, aren't you?
No, I did. I brought you up to date. It's in it. It's called She's Got a Metal Plate in Her Head. And I rediscovered it about 2 years ago. And I figured this would run today, you know, what with, you know, sick humour never dies. And so I was looking at her. She's got a metal plate in her head, and I thought this would run with today's crowd, with a little judicious modernising here and there.
You don't have a mobile phone, surely?
No, I don't.
I can't imagine you with a mobile phone. No. Okay, good.
No, I think it's changed the way people live, hasn't it? To the extent that, you know, you used to make arrangements and that was it.
Yeah.
But they keep getting micromanaged, you know, people get stuck in traffic and they change the venue of the rendezvous, you know, because they can.
Or a cancellation. You know, it's much easier to do now, isn't it?
Somebody didn't believe me the other day when I said that, you know, I was on tour with a few punk rock groups back in the 70s, and you used to do like a 28-day UK tour, and you'd have to hit that point at the right spot. And they couldn't understand how it could be done without a mobile phone. How you would have to park the car near a phone booth, and then you'd have to ask everybody if they had any change, you know, and somehow, you know, the logistics were just as good.
And you had to remember everyone's numbers, or at least have them written down, didn't you? That's the other thing.
That's it, yeah.
I can still remember my childhood phone number.
So can I.
You can remember my childhood phone number?
Yes.
That's weird. I don't like that.
01... and friends, I think, as well. I remember a couple of best friends' home telephone numbers from that time because they were the one you just always dial those.
Should we phone one now? Actually, see who answers?
We could do.
You've just reminded me of a great piece a couple of years ago in the Mail, actually, by... Craig Brown, you know that guy, columnist in the Daily Mail and other places, very funny man. But he did this thing, it was a sales pitch selling home phones, you know. At last, you don't have to carry your phone around with you. You can leave it in the house, and there's a thing called an answer phone, you know. At last, it kind of it sorts up the advantages of the house.
Of the landline.
Yeah. We recently moved house, and we were deciding whether or not to actually unpack and install the landline. Uh-huh. And then I realised that we had to, because it's what I use when I can't find my mobile phone to phone my mobile phone.
Yeah, this is how we find my wife and daughter's mobile phones all the time. Yeah.
That's the only purpose for a landline now.
Of course.
Pretty much. Adam, we're talking about this is going to hurt, obviously, your astronomically successful book. It just seems to grow and grow, this book. And I wondered if you ever imagined when you'd written it that it would resonate so much with this audience.
Absolutely not. I think there would have to be quite an ego on me to to imagine it would do what it's subsequently done at the time. But it's definitely struck a chord. I think it's just taught me how much we rightly love the NHS as an institution, as our probably greatest success as a civilised society. And yeah, there's a lot of love for it, and there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of interest peeping under the hood of medicine. We're all interested. That's why there's loads on telly. Mm. Loads of medicine, there's loads of crime, there's loads of sex, because those are things that sort of dial into our brain stems. The book, I guess, is a confidence trick. It's sold as a funny book, but ultimately it's hopefully saying something slightly more interesting.
And from taking it out on the road, because you've done it as a sort of stage show, and you're going to be in the Hammersmith Apollo, I think you're doing a date.
I am on the 18th of November, yeah.
Wow, that is nothing.
I was not to say anyone's going to be there, so it could just be a massive exercise in hubris.
Your name will still be in the... You
yeah,
know,
I'm on, still on, totally taking a photo of my name on the front.
But how has it sort of reacted with live audiences? Because I suppose when you send a book out there, yes, we have social media and things now where you get a reaction, but actually being in front of an audience and finding out what they think about it.
Yeah, I mean, with it forces them to listen to it, doesn't it? Because what it doesn't say on the Sunday Times list is how many people have read it. It could be like The Brief History of Time, which sold 35 billion copies and been read twice. But at least if I've forced them all to be in the same room as me and I'm reading out loud into a microphone, then they have to hear what I've got to say. And it's the same confidence trick. I sort of start off funny and then it goes a bit sadder, and yeah, it's been an extraordinary time. There's lots of tears, a couple of medical emergencies, one vomiting, and two people who came up to me afterwards at the book signing to say that I'd deliver their babies. And their stories seemed to check out. So.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, that's nice.
Those are my headlines.
Yes, bringing the earlier career to the latter. John, you tour, as you've mentioned already, you toured in the 70s and you've been touring with poetry in your own shows. How do you find it out on the road?
Oh, terrific. I mean, it's my working environment, has been all my professional career. Yeah, really. Yeah, fabulous. I got a drive. I go out with two other poets, Luke Wright, for instance. Mm.
He was with you quite recently, I think.
Yeah. Claire Ferguson Walker, and mainly Tori Agar Butt and Mike Garry. So it's a whole entirely poetical show, you know, no side action, just poetry all the way, and we're doing selling out large halls. Everybody goes out of there with a smile on their face. Nobody asked for the money back so far. We're doing the London Palladium later on in the month.
Nice.
I think the 24th.
24th of November.
November, yeah.
That'll be a great night.
Gold standard for me. I mean, anybody of my age, you know, the London Palladium is the gold standard.
Yeah. Of course, because it was being built when you were a teenager. Yeah.
And I was talking to, on this very podcast, in fact, John, the poet Murray Lachlan Young, who said to say hello.
Yeah, and nice hello, Murray.
And he was saying that he thinks poetry, especially in the UK, is in a really good place at the moment. Would you agree with that?
There's lots of people at it. I mean, there was no real scene for it. You've got me to thank for that. Me and Linton Kwesi Johnson, I think, are responsible for this.
I think so, yeah.
Steadily building interest in modern poetry.
We thank you
I blame
John.
Us.
Why have you not been poet laureate? When's that
well,
coming up next?
Actually, Carol Ann's quits the job, doesn't she, very soon? Carol Ann Duffy.
Who do we have to email?
I reckon...
Queen?
Are we putting bets on? I'm going to say Bag of Sands says it's Simon Armitage.
I think we could start the campaign right now.
Yep. I'm in. I'm going
two,
on the record.
You got two signatures, John.
I think I'd do better than a lot of them because take this one. Here's an instance where I might do a good job. Actually, I think it should go to Pam Ayres.
Oh, yeah.
Because she'd really like to do the job, I think. I think she's an old school girl. She's been in the RAF. You know, I think she would do a real good job. Because let's face it, the brief is you got to talk up all the royal set pieces, the weddings, the funeral. You know, God forbid the funeral. But here's an instance where I came up with the goods. I was in France. My wife's French. We were out there with her family. And it was a while back because we're walking past a newsstand. There was an issue of Paris Match, you know, the news magazine there. And there was a picture of, I knew she'd been off colour, there was a picture of the late Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother, on the cover there. And it had a black board around it, so I thought, oh, she's gone, you know, Queen Mother or less. And what was she, 102 or something?
Something like that,
she went to a good age, didn't she? But I says, I bet she's dead. So the picture up, so she, the missus, like, she died. So I come up with the goods. I come up with a short piece to commemorate the death of the Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother, right on the spot. Ask her, she's downstairs. I mean, ask her how long it took. 2 seconds I come up with this one. I thought, get to the heart of her appeal, because the Queen Mother was very popular in the East End of London on account of, she could have gone to Balmoral or something for the duration. But she stayed around, didn't she, making tea for the Blitz victims in the East End of London. And so she occupies a warm place in the heart of every Cockney, right?
Yeah.
For that very good reason. So I come up with this one, right? A four-liner. Lines upon the death of Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother. I can't remember the year. She stuck it out throughout the Blitz. When lesser mortals got the shivers.
That's lovely.
What do you think?
Yeah,
love it.
I think that's a good pitch for the
good pitch.
You know, like if you're in the obituary section of a newspaper, you'll have one ready in the wings for anyone over certain. If you're the poet laureate, do you think you've got a, you know, you've got a, you'd know what rhymes with Philip already, wouldn't you?
Yeah, that's right. You'd have to have a rhyming...
You don't want that. You want to be able to send that straight off by return of email.
Philip, you've got me there. God forbid, anyway, I'll miss him when he's gone.
I bet he looks, if you've seen him recently, he looks like he's been gone for about 15 years. Sort of Weekend at Bernie's.
Here's where the medical profession...
Well, yes, exactly. A medical eye cast over those family portraits, Adam. This is the diagnosis.
He looked great last time I see him. He come to Essex about 10 years ago, him and the missus. I took my little daughter to see him there. He looked great.
He just doesn't photo well. That's what it is.
He was a very handsome man in his days.
He was.
Quite the swashbuckler.
Yeah.
Not my type.
No.
A bit tall. We'd look weird together. A bit tall and 70 years older than me. Everyone would stare.
Here, I knew what I wanted to ask you, actually, kid. Were you ever interested in the books of Richard Gordon?
I don't know.
They made movies out of them with Dirk Bogard and Donald Sinden and James Robertson Justice. Do you remember those books? I was mad about them as a kid. I used to get them out of the library. I think that's what got me on the road to the medical career, Adam.
Yeah, for sure.
If I'm honest, yeah. He painted a pretty glamorous picture there, you know, Harley Street.
Yeah, no, he may have oversold it.
Might have oversold it a bit. So they were good. They were pretty fun. And again, they were like, you know, a bit of light and shade. Bit serious, but
you know, he had a Rolls Royce, didn't he?
That's him.
There's not a lot of, you know, looking at NHS car
days
park.
The days of the roller.
No, the winged lady is not much in representation.
The days of the gentleman physician died long ago, my friend.
Not many Bentleys in the hospital car park.
No, I did the maths on I had my old rotors, and I divided up my weekly pay by my number of hours, and I realised I was getting less than the parking meter outside.
Oh, God. What was it that drew you into a medical career then, Adam, at the first instance?
I was sort of a failure to think about what it involved, I think, predominantly. I was from a medical family. Everyone was a doctor. It's like the default setting for my life, unless I came up with a better plan, which I didn't. Because you make the decision to be a doctor when you're a teenager, when you're choosing your A-levels that the medical schools want. And being, you know, making decisions as a teenager is very bad, whatever they are, let alone determining your entire career. So I just made the wrong decision, I think. It's either you like Holby City and things, or there's doctors in the family. Those are the main. And actually, liking Holby City is probably a stronger reason to go into the profession. Some degree of insight.
Not doctors.
Oh, no.
It's a very romantic profession, though, isn't it? I mean, when you look at the successful TV series of Ben Casey, Dr. Kildare, more recently, Quincy.
I mean, it's not that recently. It's very much more recent than Dr. Kildare. These days, they really research, like when I, you know, when it's a bit of a busman's holiday, if I watch medicine on telly, all the medicine is spot on. What they never get right is all these sort of intricate love triangles. How have they got the time after work to do all of that? I'd be exhausted. I'd have a nap.
95-hour week and then, you know, finding time to go out on dates to the local pub, etc.
Yeah, God, I wish I had the, you know, the time and energy to have an affair.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Did you ever used to read that column in The Spectator by Theodore Dalrymple, If Symptoms Persist?
I did not.
You didn't read that? I think he writes for The Oldie now.
The Oldie?
You know that magazine, The Oldie. Mm. He's a very sclerotic, rather jaundiced denizen of the NHS. He's a good deal less charitable than yourself about it, Adam, but I guess that age will do that to a man.
Yeah, age tends to swing you over the right wing.
On you. But he's very, very funny. I guess you would say a mordant wit, you know, a jaundiced focus on the medical world, you know. But very funny all the same. His arch enemies seem to be epidemiologists. He's got a real downer on epidemiologists.
I think if you went into epidemiology, you'd assume you wouldn't end up with a nemesis. You think it's a fairly safe, safe profession.
You'd think everybody would say, keep up the good work, Junior. Not him. Not Dr. Dalrymple.
He was having none of it. You've both come armed with a book that you're going to pitch to us, a book that you both love and you think
you
should
read. You're going for your own book. I mean, that's a big shout.
You know, modesty forbid.
It's been 30 years, Adam. He can do what he wants.
If you're only going to buy one book this year, book early.
Get it now, ladies
now,
and gentlemen.
Now.
Yeah, before we run out of trees.
It's also available on audio.
Did you do it?
All formats. Yeah, I'm doing the audio.
Very good.
So there you've got an album.
Couldn't be anyone else.
Have you done it yet?
Yeah.
It's such a faff, isn't it? They really want you to get every word right.
That's it.
I was just like, this is going to be fine. I was a man in my ear constantly saying, can we have that again, please? And another That's option it. On that. Well, and again and again.
Only natural quality control, they call it, Adam.
Oh. Oh, and had none of that in medicine.
That'll do.
Well, you're not allowed to skip any of your own words then?
Well, that's the thing. It turns out I was very bad at saying the word prescription, which appeared quite a lot in a written down book about being
that would crop
a doctor
up a few times.
So, but I was just, I, I decided I could just paraphrase. I wasn't reading out Chaucer or anything. No one was going to complain. So I just sort of muddled my sentences so I could... so wrote a script for that patient.
Did you talk like you write?
I think the
audio equivalent of the doctor's illegible
procedure. Yes, yeah, I tried to. He made me keep repeating that.
Yeah, exactly. 9th
of January 2005.
Yeah, exactly.
So these two books are ones that you think that everyone should read, and the idea being for the book off that you have 3 minutes each. You don't have to use all three. To tell us about it, to pitch it and say why you think we should take it home. And at the end of your 3 minutes, if you're still going over, I have got some tools here that will signal the end of those 3 minutes.
The end of those, okay.
So, John, would you like to be rung out or would you like to be honked out of your time?
What do you think? The honk.
The honk. You quite like the honk, didn't you? Yeah. Okay, right, that's for you, which means, Adam, that's going to be your
I'm on the ding, okay, yeah.
And, Adam, would you like to go first or second?
Oh, I'll go second. And so I know how good to be.
Yeah.
I'm completely winging it.
Winging it's the best way, John.
I was going to have 12 Rules for Life by Dr. Jordan Peterson, but that's a very serious piece of work, and... this one's a bit, it's very interesting. It's called La Dolce Vita Confidential by Sean Levy. And he did he's done a number of books with the word confidential after. Another great one being the Rat Pack Confidential, which came out just after the death of the late Frank Sinatra. So he's got a fabulous knack of... adopting the speech patterns of whatever period is on his radar. He's like a chameleon in that regard. But it's always his voice. He's got a real handle on it. But anyway, Dolce Vita Confidential is about post-war Italy, and mainly, especially Rome, and the Cinecittà film studios built by the previously discredited Benito Mussolini. But given that they had this state-of-the-art studio complex, which was the equal of Paramount, Fox, Warner Brothers, you know, but in Italy. They made a lot of inexpensive films there. And it's no accident that biblical epics became very popular around about 1952. Quo Vadis was the first one. And there was a whole slew of them after that. Biblically, Ben-Hur, they were all shot at Cinecittà. They had these, chariot track was already in place, all built by Mussolini. It explains how broke everybody was in Italy straight after the war. And but they had this beautiful state-of-the-art studios and a limitless pool of unpaid extras. That was the thing. They would work for two meals a day, you know, and all found. At the time, you would find bed linen and socks in the pawn shops of Rome. That's how broke they were. And so you had mothers thrusting their children at these film producers, you know, please take my Giovanni, and as long as he's getting two meals a day. Anyway, I've gone on too much about this, but it's about the Via Veneto and the rise of the paparazzi, the careers of Vittorio De Sica, Roberto Rossellini, and all of those, Pasolini, all those people, and the paparazzi. Because all these Hollywood actors were away from home. Bloody hell.
I was engrossed there, John.
Was you?
Yeah. That was fantastic.
Dolce Vita Confidential by Sean Levy.
There it is. Right, that's
featuring
the
rise of the Fontana sisters, OC.
The what? The Fontana sisters?
Fontana sisters, yeah.
You're an extra time now.
Bespoke couturiers.
Sorry, I'm encouraging it as well.
Right, this is a sham, this
excellent
competition. I'm phoning the ombudsman.
Sorry.
You haven't read the small print, Adam.
What a windbag.
excellent pitch there, John. Adam, how are you feeling after that? You ready for your 3 minutes?
I mean, I'm prepared to vote for John. I don't know if I have a vote.
no, you don't get a say.
It's a democracy, oh, right.
Okay.
but your 3 minutes is on the clock, and I believe you're going to pitch to us a David Sedaris book.
I am.
Okay, over to you.
Over to David Sedaris with Holidays on Ice, bringing a bit of Christmas flair. So one of the main things to recommend this book, other than the fact it's written by David Sedaris, is that it's nice and short. And I'm always pleased when I get a book and it's nice and short, or the font's big and things like that, because, you know. David Sedaris, I think, has a good say for being one of the funniest men alive. I adore his writing. I think he's the best diarist that we've produced as a globe, to the extent that when I was putting my own diarist together, I didn't read any of his books during the process, just in case I inadvertently became a sort of shit David Sedaris tribute act. Holidays on Ice is a selection of his essays and stories of a seasonal nature. And the longest and lion's share part of this, his Santaland diaries from a period of time where he worked as an elf at Macy's. And it's just an extraordinary tale of a horrible holiday spent as an elf. And it they drug tested all the elves, and so it starts with sort of his audition. He says, I'm certain that I failed my drug test. My urine had roaches and stems floating in it, but they still hired me because I'm short. And it's a wonderful story of all the terrible, horrible things that happened during his time. There was a child sat on Santa's lap, and Santa said, "What do you want for Christmas?" He said, "I want to recover from chicken pox." And Santa leapt up. There's the story of parents insisting that their children relieve themselves underneath artificial trees onto artificial snow. Here's one. I'm just using my time reading out David Sedaris because I know he's good. The woman grabbed my arm and said, "You there, elf, tell Riley here if he doesn't start behaving immediately, then Santa's going to change his mind and bring him coal for Christmas." I said that Santa no longer deals in coal. Instead, if you're bad, he comes to your house and steals things. I told Riley if he didn't behave himself, Santa was going to take away his TV and his electrical appliances and leave him in the dark. All your appliances, including the refrigerator. Your food's going to spoil and smell bad. It's going to be so dark. Man, Riley, you're going to suffer. The woman got a worried look on her face and said, "All right, that's enough." So anyway, and it's full of seasonal stories, and it's one of my Christmas rituals. Lots of people like to get drunk and argue with their family. One thing I make sure I do every Christmas for the last decade is read David Sedaris' Holidays on Ice.
Wow. Oh, fantastic. Brought it in just in time there. Wow, both fabulous pictures and fabulous sounding books. I've read neither of the ones that you've been talking about. I'm so intrigued, John, by the history there in that book, in La Dolce Vita Confidential, because there's obviously so much to learn from it and so many stories going on there.
Yeah, there sure is. I mean, there's one. Can I just get this one in? There's a great one. I can't remember his, shamefully. I wish I had the book with me. The guy that invented paparazzi. It was like the best investment he ever did was that he bought a camera, and he would photograph all these Hollywood actors who thought out of sight, out of mind, and he would be photographing them with women who weren't their wives and things like, and people in punch-ups and things like that, compromising situations. But the best one was King Farouk was living there, you know, the morbidly obese king of somewhere in the Middle East, I can't remember where, but anyway, he's the kind of exile king, you know, surrounded by hookers and food, you know, and he had this permanent bodyguard with him, and he sneaked round this bodyguard and took a picture of King Farouk, and then he realised that this bodyguard was there. King Farouk got him round the throat, started throttling the hell out of him, and that's when he realised that this bodyguard was there to stop King Farouk murdering people.
Was it being papped?
Papped, that's exactly... Papped, that's where it got. That's where that's where it started, the paparazzi.
Is it Elio Sorci?
Yeah, it might be.
Was that the man?
It might be, yeah. But he invested in a, you know, a Brownie camera and then sold them at a scurrilous gossip press, you know, the scandal rags, and made a good living out of it.
Yeah, have you ever been Pat John?
No. My life is an open book. I've led a blameless existence.
and you, Adam, have you faced the flashing lights of a gaggle of photographers?
We go to a Halloween party, fancy Halloween party, because my other half's sort of much fancier than me. And there's always photographers, you know, taking pictures of the celebrities as they go in.
Yeah.
And you know, we always make the effort and dress in great big costumes, and we're sort of quite competitive between ourselves about who's going to dress better. And every single year for the last decade, he's got into a paper, and I've been cropped out at and my hand holding onto his.
You've got the elbow or something.
Yeah. So yeah. I mean, my right hand's had a bit of action, but other than that, no.
And what I loved about your pitch, Adam, and indeed the sound of this Sidaris book is, you know, it's sort of very seasonal, perfect sort of Christmas gift. It sounds like, but you know, diarists are just so enjoyable to read, and you can sort of pick those collections up and just read a little if you haven't got much time or just before you go to bed, and you can sort of have a laugh and get a whole anecdote and story just in a couple of minutes.
Snackable for idiots like me who just sort of read Twitter. And also poems are great because they're nice and short.
You can do that
certainly
with poetry. Yes, yeah, sure can. Better if you do it that way, actually.
I mostly read in bed, and it's like when you think you've got another 15 minutes of awakening you, and you turn the next chapter and you're sort of flicking through to see how long it's going to be, because you want to commit to 80 pages.
Yeah.
I don't like to read one poem after another.
No, I don't either. No.
I need to read the one I'm concentrating on and then just let it...
Well, you're poor audiences at these shows. After poem one, you're like, I'm done.
Off you go to the bar.
Are you getting all this? Hopefully not. I'll be back next year.
As is the rules of the book off, I do have to choose a book to take home on behalf of our audience. But as I say, every bloody time... I like the sound of both of these books, and I'll probably go and explore them. La Dolce Vita Confidential sounds fascinating, actually, and also that Sean Levy as an author, he's got quite a few of these confidentials under his belt.
He did one about swing in London, you know, the 60s in London. The best thing I've ever read about it. It's by an American, you know, with that distance.
Yes, of
looking
course.
At it as the social phenomenon. But it does go zeroing in. Terrific chapter about Terence Stamp in it, called Tugboat Terry. So he knows all about their backgrounds, you know. Because Terence Stamp's dad was a tugboat skipper.
Oh, wow,
really? Yeah, he's a proper blue-collar guy, Terry.
Adam, with yours, I love David Sedaris. I haven't read Holidays on Ice. And this sort of time of year, I'm thinking about what's that gift I can give to someone, and I love the anecdotes within it. And I loved how you sold it with the readings and everything. So I'm going to take David Sedaris home.
Yes!
I'm going to take David.
Did it.
I hope you don't mind, John. I hope you forgive me for that.
Not a bit. No, the
microphone isn't picking up the fury on your face. The throwing around of electrical equipment.
What's that he's got in his hand? I don't know.
They teach you believability at medical college.
It's very true. He's used to delivering these sorts of messages. Adam, is there another book, do you think, coming? Are you sort of ready to write something else, or are you enjoying this?
Sort of depends who's asking. According to my publishers, I've written half of it already. I'm doing, I try not to be a David Sedaris tribute act. My next book is a book of medical stories at Christmas called "'Twas the Night Shift Before Christmas," which is just sort of talking about the hilarity and the heartbreak and everything that happens, because where I worked on the labour ward, you know, babies don't care if they're born on Christmas Day or the 25th of March. Like Jesus, famously.
He was born on the 25th of December.
Yeah, that's right. So I mean, that's my next thing. And until that, I guess I'm just pottering around the country, you know. Treading the boards.
Yeah. And obviously finishing the book, Adam, if the publisher's listening. Obviously.
That's pretty much done. Yeah, that's in the bag.
Morning till night. And John, will we be waiting another 30 years for a new collection?
For the next anthology of verse. Who knows? But hopefully, I could bring out another one that size tomorrow.
Well, like
poetry,
you said...
Poetry, I got it.
You got it. But, you certainly have. And we're looking forward to seeing you at the Palladium.
Fabulous.
As you said, the end of this month. Yeah. And more touring, I guess, around the
country
the
way.
As well.
At the Palladium, will you do the Hanging Gardens of Basel?
I certainly will.
That's
thanks
my
for
favourite
the
of
yes.
My
I've just
favorite.
Done it on the Robert Elms show have this you? Morning. Yeah, yeah. One of my favourites, that. I love that.
John Cooper Clarke's The Luckiest Guy Alive is published by Picador and is out now, so go and add it to your collection, ladies and gents. And Adam Kay's This Is Going to Hurt is published by Pam McMillan and available in paperback now. And go and see both of these gentlemen live. Adam is at the Hammersmith Apollo on the 18th of November. Wow. John Cooper Clarke at the Palladium on cool. the 24th.
24th, yeah.
Excellent. Thank you both for joining me. Thank you for bringing your books to the Book Off. And happy Christmas.
Happy
same
Christmas.
To you. Thanks, Joe. Wonderful.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.